What do you want?
To find a cure for the Drak plague.
Where are you going?
Anywhere I have to.
Who do you serve? And who do you trust?
If it's not eating us, what's it doing?
No, it's not.
It's mating with us?
Well, it's not exactly the first contact situation that I'd envisioned, but...
I want it off my ship.
I want you to know that this thing just made a very large dent in my ship. Did you ever think about looking outside before you start throwing things overboard?
Who do you serve? And who do you trust?
I don't know.
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. Each week, we will be reviewing an episode of the 1990s TV classic Babylon 5 spin-off series, Crusade. I'm Paul.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And we are the Epsilon 3.
This week, episode 1, Racing the Night. And the synopsis. Set in 2267, 5 years after the events of Babylon 5, and just after the movie A Call to Arms, the Drak have released a nanovirus plague on Earth, which will destroy all life on Earth within 5 years if it is not stopped. The Victory-class destroyer, Excalibur, has been sent out to look for anything that could help the search for a cure. In this episode, the crew visits a planet once home to a civilization wiped out by the same plague as the one the Drak left on Earth. They are surprised to find all the buildings still perfectly intact, but then motion is detected in the ancient city. Written by JMS and directed by Mike Vijar, this episode was released on August 4th, 1999, and takes place in April 2267. And our stars and guest stars, Gary Cole as Captain Matthew Gideon, Tracy Scoggins as Captain Elizabeth Lockley, Daniel Day-Kim as Lieutenant John Matheson, David Alan Brooks as Max Eilerson, Peter Woodward as Galen, Margene Holden as Dr. Sarah Chambers, Carrie Dobro as Jorina Nafil, Brennan T. Byrd as Kulan, Madison Mason as General Miller, Neil Bradley as Drazi Ambassador, Roxanne Brusso as crew member number one, Jonathan Chapman as Brakiri Ambassador, and Adam Clark as Ranger. Before we go any further, Galen, who we saw in the movie A Call to Arms, I think it was, pops up, is played by Peter Woodward, and I did not make the connection.
But what Edward connection Woodward, is that?
Edward Woodward's son.
Cool.
He's a British actor, Ewa Wuwa, if you took out all of his the D's in his name. God, what has he been in?
He is the person who inspired the Equalizer movies, because he played the Equalizer in the 1970s, 80s TV series over here.
Interesting.
And it's the same character, basically, but obviously Americanized and played brilliantly by the guy whose name I've forgotten. he basically started that. He's one of these characters who comes in and can play a hard man. He was in the Wicker Man, wasn't he?
Yes, Wicker Man. Yeah. The inspector who gets burned alive in the
Wicked
thing. Yes.
So yeah, he's a solid English actor, classically trained, I think, but certainly. He quite easily plays the hard man. He's not tall particularly, so it's sort of unassuming sort of build. But he is, you know, he plays hard characters. Yeah, excellent actor, and his son. Hard to tell from this one performance, but there you go. So, guys, what do we think of this episode?
Well, I'll tell you, it certainly didn't draw me in like Babylon 5. Of course, season one of Babylon 5 was a hard watch in some parts too. Well, this is the follow-up series to Babylon 5, but as we know, it only got 13 episodes. So obviously the powers that be didn't much care for it either. And this is episode 9 in its production order, but we're watching it first because that's the JMS order. And I got to say, I don't care. I know that Earth is going to be destroyed in 5 years and we're all going to die, but oh well, that's fine.
Dan, what did you make of it?
It's true. It's true. It's not a good starting position. If it was written as a pilot, I don't think it would have worked as the pilot. I know we had Call to Arms, which is kind of like the backdoor pilot, like because it takes the characters we know and then builds the premise for the series. And then now we've got these characters, but we weren't introduced to them. We didn't have like the captain building his crew, then goes out on the mighty mission. So I don't, you know, I instantly don't like the Max Ireland character because his first conversation with the captain is that he puts profit above everybody. So there's a character I don't like straight away. It's not that he had like a heart of gold or there was like a little bit of a twinkle in his eye. He's just a horrible person. So he's awful. I'm not going to like him now for the rest of the series. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. I hope he gets more of his comeuppance in future episodes. And that is a character that you just love to hate. But I just don't see that they've built anything to make it that way. First off, before we go into the episode itself, what the hell is this theme music? What is the title sequence? It's like they left a Casio keyboard from the 1980s running on the default setting, and they just had the Galen character just speaking some lines, and they thought, oh, no, don't worry, we'll record that. That's just the basic thing, and then we'll send it off to ILM or whoever was going to do their graphics department, and we'll put in a theme tune later. We'll get a composer, and it'll be a fantastic, like, roaring, you know, kind of wonderful classical piece of music that'll be about a big journey, the crusade. We're going to go out into the galaxy and save humanity. And don't worry, the Casio thing is just an accident, and someone forgot to just amend the file that the intern just forgot to put that file into the software to finish off the credit sequence because it sucks. I watched it and I'm like, I'm not invested. How is that like the roaring crusade? You've got a word, the crusade. That's such an evocative kind of word and it's so cool. And, you know, you've got this kick-ass ship that was killing all these things in Call to Arms. And it's like... I was waiting for like German techno to start up. It's like a Kraftwerk. We are going to Kraftwerk. Who do you serve?
Yeah, you're not wrong.
It sucks. Yes. It sucks.
And why is Galen asking the questions in the title sequence? It's a cross between Kosh and Lorien. Their questions.
But it sounds like discount Richard O'Brien from the Call to the Arms. It's like, who do you serve? Yes. You're going to the master. Hello. It's just, no, it doesn't work for me at all. And then you get this episode, which had lots of great ideas. Like, it's another civilization that went through the exact same thing they did. But I don't care. Like, they were really horrible. That he lured people in to experiment on them, cut them into pieces, and then do nothing with it. They didn't develop a cure. They haven't done anything for 200 years, was it? They were in Slugma.
A thousand years.
It was a thousand years. See, a thousand years. They were just cutting people up into bits, including a homunculus. The homunculus scene made me laugh out loud because it looks like my kid playing Roblox. It's awful. That is just, I mean, I know we shouldn't judge technology and CGI back then, but that was terrible even for back then. Again, yeah. I thought I was watching like Dire Straits music video or something.
But it's money for nothing.
They make up for it though with the cool glasses on the speeder bike.
Oh yeah, that was a speeder bike that is something that we've never seen in Babylon 5, and has no reason just to make the captain look cool, I guess. Oh, it was just awful. There was a lot they could have done and they didn't do it, and it was just boring. So there we go. That's the episode. Boring. Let's go recap it. What did you think, Paul?
So okay, so you say the Max Eilerson character. Yeah, not. You don't jump to his defense straight away and say, no, he'll develop. This, don't forget, is actually episode 13. If he hasn't developed or had nine out of 13. Yes. So if he hasn't developed or have his comeuppance by now,
he's just a dick.
Yeah, then we've got a problem. So I thought this was until we get to the actual episode one, which we'll be watching later down the line, which may be a better start, because reading the synopsis as I have, because I jumped ahead a little bit to see what it was like, it does make more sense as a beginning episode. However, this actually does work as a beginning episode, because you do get sort of introduced to the characters, because they are saying, oh yes, when I was in this, in the past, I did this. Or so they're still describing what they used to do and what they're doing now to a degree. However, this is episode 9. Why are they still doing this? It is a bit confusing. Let's see what happens when we get to the actual episode 1 and see what we make of that, and whether that would have made a better start to the season. The music, I it was that bad, but now that you've mentioned it, Dan, yes, this is called the Crusade, and we do have a ship called Excalibur. You would at least maybe have some, I don't know, I don't want to go into medieval music, but, you know, some sort of G-up music with swords type of thing, you know, the sort of thing you would have in a film about the Crusades, maybe. Or, you know, have Robin Hood or something. I don't know, anything, but this is all. And who do you want, and where are you going? Well, who do you serve and who do you trust? It's just, are we going to get this?
Who do you
question?
Love? Who loves you, and who do you love?
Yeah, who are you? I have no idea anymore. It's just, it is a very bizarre intro. But there you go. That's what we've got. So let's get into the review. Captain Matthew Gideon is dreaming of a meeting he attended.
And it is our firm belief that Captain Gideon is the right man for this job. His reputation...
We are aware of your captain's reputation. He has taken part in more battles during peacetime than most officers face in a major war. His latest involved one of our captains who was justifiably upset after losing everything he owned in a card game. Losing to you.
He bet everything he had on a bluff. Not my fault.
Captain Gideon was personally selected by President Sheridan.
General, we recognize that Earth will die unless you can find a cure for this terrible virus off-world. But we cannot allow passage through our respective areas of space until we are sure that this will not lead to an incident.
Captain Gideon was chosen personally by President Sheridan to lead this mission. As head of the Interstellar Alliance and the one who is providing us with the Excalibur...
It still requires our approval. Since you enjoy gambling, Captain, I will make a wager with you. Agree, and we will allow you free passage in any area of our jurisdiction.
So what is the bet?
You say this virus will become active in 5 years. At that point, every man, woman, and child of your world will die, correct? Then we will give you permission to move freely for 4 years. If you cannot find a cure for the virus by then, you will spend the 5th year in orbit around your homeworld.
Why?
As the day of planetary death looms closer, your people will become desperate, frightened, irrational. Many of them will try to escape from Earth. You will stop them by personally shooting down any ship trying to leave.
Ambassador!
We do not want your kind spreading this virus to our worlds in a blind panic. What will it be, Captain? Will you agree to shoot down your own ships, kill your own people, if you cannot find a cure in 4 years?
But why did he agree to it?
Damn it, Captain! You should never have agreed to that. You might as well have made a bet with the devil.
With what's at stake, sir? If I could find him, I'd bring the cards myself.
Well, there's your ship. A one-of-a-kind prototype. The best ship we've got. Good luck with her, son. Because unless we find something at home to beat that damn virus, you and your crew and that ship are the last best hope of Earth. Don't screw it up.
And then we have a captain's journal.
Captain's personal journal continued. Our search for a cure to the Drak plague has brought us to a dead world unlike any we've seen before. It's more than just the strange appearance of the buildings. Whoever lived here vanished centuries ago. But the city is still in perfect shape, as if they had never disappeared. It feels like the city is watching us. But of course, that's not possible.
A crew member is taking samples of rocks from the city floor when suddenly a shadow falls over him. He's then shot in the chest by a laser. Dr. Max Eilerson, an archaeologist, is working on some hieroglyphs, and he has been for 8 hours. You can't rush an archaeologist. Captain Gideon wants to know what the hieroglyph says. He's been able to translate most of this section. There are equations for a whole new means of creating and conserving energy, a way of doubling the speed of their starships, and a new alloy that is very light but can support tons of equipment. But are there any medical hieroglyphs? Well, no. The captain says they can't afford to be distracted by things that will not help cure the virus. Dr. Sarah Chambers has some soil samples, which has approximately 30 different types of DNA in them. Gideon says that if they're not the first people here, then why hasn't this place been stripped bare? And why were the hieroglyphs open for everyone to see? All they know is that the planet has been deserted for 1,000 years, and the aliens who built it disappeared overnight. It couldn't be a plague that wiped them out, as there is no sign of any bodies. Dr. Chambers was looking for a way to get into some of the other vaults, so asked Jorina Nafeel to find a way in. She is currently crawling through a ventilation shaft-sized tunnel, finding skeletons along the way. Well, there's your bodies, surely. As she's crawling through one of the tunnels, the floor breaks through, and she finds what looks like a huge chamber with a glowing energy source. Just then, the captain calls through to say there has been a murder. When they arrive at the scene of the crime, they find that the body has been gutted and all his internal organs has been taken. There are no signs of any other footprints other than the victim's. Just then, the Excalibur calls the captain and says there is movement in the vicinity. They see a large number of small ships arriving. The captain jumps aboard his speeder, distracting the ships, leading them away from the crew by flying through the city's skyscrapers. The Star Wars-style pod race carries on between the city's buildings, where some of the chasing ships crash against the sides of the walls. In a very unexciting chase, although graphically very good, the captain spots another ship above him and manages to jump off his speeder and into what turns out to be Galen's vessel. When the captain gets on board his ship, he is met by Lieutenant John Matheson, who tells him that they have scanned the planet down to a depth of 0.5 miles, and there are no signs of any movement. All movement ceased when they left the surface. When he gets to the bridge, Dr. Chambers mentions that crewman Ferrelli was vivisected. This interests Galen, who goes off to his ship to collect something. Galen jumps aboard the internal transport and finds Jorina waiting for him. He says the answer is still no. She wants to be taught everything he knows, but this is the wrong time, and he says that she wants to know for the wrong reason. The need for revenge. Only when she has grown out of her rage will they talk, and not before. A probe is sent down to the surface. It contains a homunculus, which is Latin for parallel version of oneself, or actually, a miniature or fully formed human. It is like a hologram, but with more substance. One of the worst CGI human figures you could ever wish to see is now walking around on the surface.
And as those eyes, oh, they were staring into my soul. It was so creepy.
The weirdest thing is we just had a TV movie, like two TV movies ago, where the holograms were just actors that they said were holograms. Why couldn't they just put an actor in the scene again? It didn't make any sense.
Because we had to know that it was a fake thing.
A different thing, yeah.
Well, because of all of the money they'd saved on the actors, they managed to, you know, up the CGI a little bit more.
Oh, man.
Because don't forget, the ship already existed from the budget they used in the previous film.
Very true.
The homunculus are now walking around the surface. As it does, it is approached by a large ship, and a laser beam is fired into his chest, as his organs are then harvested.
Oh my! Whatever shall I do? They've all left without me. I knew I'd forget where we parked that shuttle. I hope something dreadful doesn't happen to me. Oh, look. Something dreadful.
The homunculus's head is taken into the ship.
Stop! That's her! reality of it. The horror.
My liver. I wondered where that had got to.
Not so fast.
Which then flies over a large junkyard containing hundreds of other ships, but no bodies. However, Jurina has found the bodies. She tells them about the chamber and the energy source and how there are thousands of bodies with no two being the same. Having a fixed energy source to focus their scanners on, they find that the generator has tapped down to the core of the planet to draw the power from there. They find faint life signs, billions of them, in what appears to be a cryogenic chamber. But suddenly there is movement on the surface as a large section of the city opens up and thousands of ships appear out of the hole that has been uncovered. The captain orders the Excalibur to make a run for it, but they are being held in some kind of enhanced gravity field, and the hostiles are gaining fast. They launch the fighters to attack the gravity generator and bring primary and secondary weapons online. A battle ensues, but the gravity generator is increasing its power, which is dragging the ship nearer the planet. As the planet continues, the situation is grave and they're running out of time. Matheson reminds the captain that firing the main guns will result in 1 minute worth of downtime with no gravity or life support. The captain says he is aware of this as he has read the manual. If this was the first episode, then this sentence makes perfect sense.
Yes. However, this is episode 9, and they must have used the weapon some other time.
You'd think, wouldn't you? Maybe. I mean, episode 9, and we only see the guns now. Okay.
It's a slow build-up for dramatic purposes.
Yes. The fighters continue to bombard the surface and open up a target for the main guns to fire at. The guns fire, but they won't know if they have hit the target for another 45 seconds. Although I would have thought a lack of gravity field might, you know, attracting the ship might be a clue. If you hit the target, oh, we're floating around in the middle of space. Oh, it must be the fact that we've hit the target.
Worked.
Yeah. Just then, the ship is scanned from 5 miles below the surface, accessing the data and language files. All the enemy ships have now stopped the attacks and are floating in space when suddenly a hologram appears. An actual hologram, this is, of course, you know. The actor standing there with a bit of fuzziness. Yeah. The visitor is Kulan, and he is the keeper of this world for this generation.
My name is Matthew Gideon, captain of the Starship Excalibur. Can you understand me?
I have absorbed your language file. My name is Kulan. I am keeper of this world for this generation.
You attacked my ship, killed members of my crew. Why?
It was necessary. It is the responsibility of each keeper in each generation to run the tests on those who discover our world.
But what kind of tests?
1,000 years ago, the Dark Ones came for us. They desired to create a base on our world. We refused, and they decided to punish us. They released a poison into our atmosphere, a virus that infected all our people, a virus that would kill all in 5 years. And then they turned and left as though we were already dead.
It is the same virus that has been applied to Earth.
Yes. That is why I decided to contact you. I saw in your records that your world has suffered a similar fate.
But this is 1,000 years later. You must have found some way to beat the plague to...
No. You never found a cure, did you?
What are you talking about?
The tests, Matthew. Dissecting anyone who comes here. Luring the people of other worlds to study them. You are still looking for a cure.
If you freeze a person, you freeze the virus.
We struggled for 3 years to defeat the plague and failed. We had few ships capable of starflight, not enough to look elsewhere for our cure, as you were doing. So we went to sleep.
Those must have been the cryonic tubes that we saw in the scanners. By freezing an infected person, you freeze the virus, so it can't advance until you thaw it out again. They must have placed their whole culture in cryonic freeze, set the machines in place to conduct biological tests on anyone who came by. It makes sense.
Would you kill 100 or 1,000 people to save your billions?
It was our hope that one of those who came to our world would have encountered the virus and found a cure.
or was naturally immune.
You can't murder someone because it's a convenient form of testing.
These who died are only a fraction of the billions of our people who sleep waiting for a cure. Would you sacrifice 100 lives to save your 10 billion? If 100, why not 1,000? Why not 10,000?
There are other ways.
Captain Gideon disagrees and orders his fighters to shoot the enemy ships out of the sky. He says if they find the cure, they will plug it here, and then we'll make sure that their people will be brought to account for all the people they have killed. Galen says that the Keeper is only around for a generation, so how long is a generation? The Keeper is awakened to look over the planet, but will only last 2 years before the virus will kill him. 500 of them have been awakened so far. He only has 6 months left. The Keeper then leaves the ship. The next planet to look for a cure has been decided on. Galen says that he understands that the planet they have just come from was not on the list given to him by the Rangers. So how did the captain come to choose that one? The captain says he has his sources. Galen leaves the bridge and enters a lift where Jurina is waiting for him. He says the answer is still no, for now. In his quarters, the captain takes out a chest from a secret panel. He opens it and says, the last choice was not a good one. Something in the box speaks back to him. The captain then asks where to next.
Where to? Well, that's easy. We're going to play a promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network. Pardon the interruption. We'll bring you back to your podcast in just a moment. But first, promo for the Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
In the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, your pizza delivery guys, Dan, Sean, and Paul, serve you a slice of life.
As we discuss literally anything in the universe.
Conspiracy theories?
Movies that we've liked. Women in comedy, voice actors, film directors and producers, authors.
But what we don't talk about is pizzas.
Wednesday, I'm here with you people. It's wild.
And on to the trivia. As we have already mentioned, this was actually meant to be the pilot episode, according to executive producer and writer J. Michael Straczynski. And that's the trivia.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
Wow.
It's sparse on trivia. So, sure, are there any Star Trek connections?
Yeah, we do have a few new ones here. We've got Adam Clark, who played Ranger. He was in two episodes of Enterprise as Josiah in Demons and Terror Prime. We've got Brennan Baird, who played Kulan, the holographic guy at the end. He was in the Deep Space Nine episode Things Past as a soldier. And then we've also got Daniel Day Kim, who plays Lieutenant John Matheson. He was Corporal Chang in three episodes of Enterprise. And of course, he was Gotana Retz in the Voyager episode Blink of an Eye, which was a much better episode than this one.
Yeah. Is that all? Is that all you could find?
That's all I got for new ones.
I've got two more.
You got probably Margene Holden.
Yes.
But we talked about her in the movie.
Okay, fine. And Gary Cole?
I couldn't find anything for him.
Ooh, he was Leonardo da Vinci in Star Trek Lower Decks, Season 1, Episode 9, Crisis Point.
Ah.
Okay, good call.
Yeah, that was. I was surprised. I thought, oh, has Gary Cole actually been in Star Trek before? And I'm going down the list thinking, well, how old would he be? Is he the right age? I'm trying to think rapidly where he sits in the grand scheme of things. And yeah, it was only a couple of years ago when he was in Lower Decks. Yeah. But yeah, as a voice, so he played.
Oh, wow. Somehow I missed that in my IMDb whatever.
Yeah, that one. Yeah,
you know that thing there.
So there you go. Yeah, excellent. Okay, so onto our rating system, and we rate this out of jump gates, five jump gates indeed, because it. Wrong.
Should
crusade.
We change our rating?
Okay,
yeah.
We'll rate it. We'll rate ships. It out of five crusades. because of Crusade and
five vampires. Yeah.
Yes. So but IMDb of course rate these episodes out of 10, and they have given this a 7.6.
wow.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's
so
very high. Wow. Is that's pretty high. Like, how is the rest of the series looking against that? Like,
I don't know. I haven't looked.
Okay, I'm gonna.
But don't forget that this is episode 9 to IMDb. So Maybe yeah. there's some real crap coming up and we haven't got to it yet.
Blimey.
So, guys, what do we think of this?
Well, sir, sure. let me tell you, I bought the box set of Crusade about 20 years ago when I bought all the box set seasons of Babylon 5, and I devoured all the seasons of Babylon 5. I think I've only watched 3 or 4 episodes of Crusade, and then I put it away and never went back to it. And this is the first time I've seen this episode. Should have seen it 20 years ago, but never did. I don't even think I watched it when it was actually on TV. And I don't feel like I'm missing anything either because of it. It's boring. The speeder bike canyon scene was very derivative of a million other things that I've seen. Like Dan said, Max Eilerson there, he's an ass. I don't care for him at all. I like Darina. She's a cool character. Galen, I don't know yet. He's his acting is a little bit over the top. Gary Cole's a great actor. I don't mind him at all. Him and his cool sunglasses, like David Caruso there. but I don't care that the Earth is going to die in 5 years if they don't find the cure. Like, I don't feel any sense of urgency here. It doesn't matter. I'm going to give it a 2.25 out of 5.
Fair. Okay. Dan?
Yeah. If this was the pilot, I don't think it would have hooked me in. I don't think I would have carried watching. Again, there were lots of good ideas. You know, the first planet they go to, say this was the pilot. This is the first planet they go to because of mysterious reasons the captain's got. They went to the exact planet that went through the exact same thing they did. And now they're learning there is a solution. You could actually just freeze everybody and wait for the cure, but it could take thousands of years. So it's kind of like an echo, a warning of what their future could be. So that's a good, an interesting idea. You could have had almost a two-parter where it's all the murder mystery. All these people keep dying on their first mission. Are they cursed? You know, are they ever going to actually find the cure? Because all the crew are getting killed off. And then the second half is the big mystery of what's actually on the planet and dealing with these weird drones and stuff like that. But they didn't do enough to really buy us in. You know, I didn't care. Again, like Sean said, I'm not invested in the Crusade yet. So it didn't do what it was supposed to do. And there wasn't a lot of characters in there that drew me in. The ones that actually had got the airtime, didn't really care for. Gary Cole, fine. I mean, they've got Daniel Day-Kim, and he wasn't used in this episode, other than telling him that, you know, the such and such ship is moving, or we've got movement on the ground.
And he's
a criminally underused actor. Mm. He's a fantastic actor. Why don't they give him more to do in this episode? Like, use his telepathy or whatever, because he's got the psychor patch on, so I figured maybe he's got some weird thing, maybe he'll figure something out. Nope, completely underused in this episode. So I'm going to go a little bit higher than Sean, in that it made me laugh so much with the homunculus. 2.3 out of 5, whatever we're going to rate. Plague ships. I don't care. Whatever we're going to rate it out of.
Amazing. we're all around about the same score. That's great. So, yeah, okay. So I was going to give this a sort of, you know, it's season one. This idea was supposed to be, it was the first episode. So I was thinking, you know, it might be a bit ropey, but, you know, we'll see. Let's go with it. I thought some of the CGI was good. Some of it was very good. And some of it was a little dodgy. But again, TV series, not a movie. We've just come off watching, what, 1, 2, 3 episode, 3 films or TV movies, where things were getting stretched out to try and fill the space, you know, because they didn't quite have a full episode to pad it out. This is a full episode, and they were still trying to pad it out. There are long sections of music and scenes without anything happening in it, which is strange, because suddenly the whole episode seemed to have been finished with about 10 minutes of the episode to go. And this is without advert breaks, of course. So we're watching 42 minutes worth of TV program. By 32 minutes, they've come to the conclusion. They've had the guy telling his story about he is the keeper of the planet. And that was it. That was the end. I thought, but we've still got 10 minutes to go here. They compressed the whole story into 20 minutes. Because the, you get the introduction-y bits at the beginning. It takes a while before you find out what the plot's going to be. It's all over within 20 minutes in the middle section. And then 10 minutes at the end is the scene with Galen and Jirina in the turbolift, or whatever it was. And then Gideon getting his box out with and having a chat to his box. So it was bizarre.
I kept watching the timer on my DVD player. When is this freaking thing going to be over with? I don't care. That's how I felt the whole time.
But it was over so quick. That was the bizarre thing. It was the beginning bit was a long intro into it, and then suddenly it's all boom, 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 and it was one thing leads to another, and we're done. If they padded it out over the whole episode, it might have drawn up a bit more suspense and what are these ships that are flying around? Are they manned or are they just little drones? It was hard to see.
They look like Cylon Raiders from the new Battlestar.
Yeah, they did. So that was a bit weird in that respect. Acting from Gary Cole, I like, and I like his character. I like his snarkiness and his little side comments. I like the interaction with him and Galen, where they just, Galen thinks he's all, the big, I am the super being. I am much better than you. And of course this is going to happen. What did you think? All this type of thing. I love this little, it's definitely not, aggression and being, they don't like each other. They do like each other. And there is a relationship forming between the two of them, which is good. Jirina, I just hope we don't see Jirina as the person who breaks into everything every time they come to a planet. We need the locksmith, get her in. I hope there's a bit more to her than that. As you say, Daniel Day-Kim, he just oozes quality in his performance. You can see why he ended up in Lost and various other TV programs because he's such a great actor. Solid performance from him. Eilison, oh my God. Mm-hmm. He's the most. It could be that they said to him, "Look, we want you to be creepy, horrible,
smarmy.
Smarmy, that's the word." And he's done such a fantastic job of acting that part that instantly you hate him. Now, in which case, he's a bloody good actor,
right?
So it's hard to say with him. I don't know where we sit really with what he is. Is he a good actor or is he just? His character is just a tit. I don't know. I mean, he doesn't endear to himself to anybody, which we'll find out a bit more in a couple of episodes' time, I'm sure. So for all of that, although a lot of it was pretty poor, there were some good bits. There were some, like I say, the good comments, nice bit of humor in it. I like there's a good bit of humor running through it. It seems that there's something missing, though, and I don't know what it is. It just seems a bit stale. It doesn't seem to have any character in it.
Agree.
So for that, I'm going to go right in the middle and say it's 2.25 out of 5. Well, 2.5. What did I say? 2.5 out of 5, right in the middle. Yes.
I think you were right the first time. 2.25.
Yeah, that's right. I looked at your score instead of mine. I thought, no, that's not in the middle. 2.5. So we're all around about the same area, which is... It's to me, this is just
on average.
Mine's on average. Dan's a little bit above average, and Sean's a little bit below average. But average episode for the start. It does, however, if we were to include these numbers in with the Babylon 5 episodes, this is in Sean's bottom 10.
Hmm. Wow.
But not ours. So there's a fine line there between 2.25 and 2.3. But anyway, yes, but below our averages for that. But we'll see how this stacks up against other Crusade episodes, because really it is a different show. One thing that knocked the score down for me, only one alien.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else was human.
True.
Bizarre.
Yeah, very true. Yeah.
I didn't get the feeling that it was set in space at points. There was a lot of humans. I know Jirina that's like a Bajoran, just stick a bit of nose thing on her and she becomes an alien. You have to remind yourself that she's not human. Whereas the guy who was the alien who came on at the end of the hologram was obviously an alien. He had a lot of prosthetic stuff on over him. So, yeah. But everybody else, human.
Well, hooray for generic 1990s sci-fi. Mm. I can't wait to do the next exciting episode.
Well, wait no more. Okay, I think we've got to call that. So that's the end of this episode. Join us next week when we will be discussing season one. Yes, obviously, there's only one season. Episode two.
The Needs of Earth.
If you have any thoughts on this episode, why not send in some feedback to the epsilon3@gmail.com. That's three spelled T-H-R-E-E, not the number. Or you can find us on our Facebook page. Just search for the Epsilon 3.
Well, if you have any other problems, any other questions at all, just ask.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.